Right. our legislative mandate is as follows. The Ministers of Finance, Home Affairs, and Public Service and Administration approved the business case of GPW, and GPW was established as a government component on the 9th of October 2019. As a government component, the GPW delivers security printing services to government. The GPW operates on regular business principles, having to defray its expenditure from the revenue generated by services rendered. So we do not receive a budget as such from the national fiscus, though in the past several years there have been transfers from the national treasury to recapitalize the GPW. But this coming financial year should be the last year in which we require transfers from national treasury. From 2014 onwards, all our expenditure will be defrayed from revenue generated by services rendered. Our strategic outcome-oriented goals for the following 5 years are such. The first strategic outcome-oriented goal is to develop the government component. This we've been doing since 2009, and we hope to complete that process during the following 5 years. So our goal statement is to fully develop the government component to perform as a sustainable, ring-fenced business entity with flexibility and within regulated parameters. The honourable members know that almost every day there are news in the media about government-owned businesses that are in trouble, whether it's with the board, or the executive, or the operations, or the need for bailouts from the national fiscus. We're proud of the fact that the GPW is developing as a business that is not constantly in trouble and requiring assistance from the national fiscus. Our second strategic outcome to go is to optimize our processes and facilities. And this is in order to increase the operational effectiveness and improve customer service. In practical terms, this means renovating the government garage that we were allocated on the Clarkson Street, and hopefully over the next 2 to 3 years, moving the entire operations from the current Bosman Street site to the Clarkson Street site. At the moment, the new passport factory is at Clarkson Street. From July onwards, the new national ID smart card will be produced on Clarkson Street. So the passports and ID smart cards will be produced in Pavilion 1, which is probably one of the most sophisticated passport and ID smart card facilities in the world. Pavilion 2 has already been renovated as well, and that is the security printing division. But there are still Pavilion 3, 4, and 5 that need to be renovated over the next few years. And there have been delays in this process due to difficulty at Department of Transport. So that's in terms of the facility. In terms of the processes, the government printing works have been undertaking a process of improving, optimizing our processes both in terms of the internal business process, introducing an enterprise resource planning system, and also in terms of the services that we provide, so that as well as providing security printing and providing other printing services, we will soon be moving to provide the new National ID Smart Card, and also providing services through the internet in terms of a public website that was launched last year, GPW Online, and also in terms of the Government Gazette, the electronic version of which was also launched last year. So we're optimizing our business processes internally in terms of integrating management information systems, and also externally in terms of the services that we provide through the public website and also through the electronic website. So that's the strategic outcome-oriented goal number two. So strategic outcome oriented goal number three is of producing a developed workforce. And the statement is to have an efficient, effective, and well-trained and developed workforce and special remuneration dispensation for the government component. The government printing works is on a trajectory of transforming from an outdated printing company with dilapidated machines within a building that's 60 years old to a modern print and media company operating state-of-the-art printing machines within a newly renovated facility and employing an efficient and well-trained and developed workforce. The principal constraint in that respect is in terms of our salary structure. So the government component, we are bound by the public service administration regulations in terms of salary structures. But we do currently have a task team that is working in order to prepare a report for the Minister of Public Service Administration and the Minister of Home Affairs on the rationale and possible structure of a special salary dispensation for the government component. This task was mandated by the Minister of Public Service Administration, and we are working with her officials and with government printing works officials to prepare that report for her. And as you know, Honourable Chairperson, this portfolio committee advocated a few years ago for such a special salary dispensation for the government printing works. In terms of the overall budget, and Mr. Barnard will go into the budget in greater detail later on in his presentation, but in terms of the structure of the budget, finance is essential to achieving the strategic outcome-oriented goals that the GPW has adopted. And in terms of the budget for the coming financial year, 2013-2014, you can see the structure on the table shown. And in the middle, you will see that remuneration, we estimate, will be of the order of 225 million rand. This is in respect of introducing the new GPW establishment, that is, the new human resource establishment that is required to run a modern print and media company. And that implementation has been progressing for the last few years and will continue. Feel the coming years in the medium-term expenditure framework, there will be increasing expenditure in terms of remuneration as we roll out that new establishment. In order to become a modern print and media company, it's important that our staff are developed. That's a critical aspect of our work. And as you can see, in terms of staff development, on the second line, we estimate we'll be spending in the coming year over 10 million rand on staff development. I mentioned that we are undergoing an asset recapitalization program. Many of our machines at Boston Street are over 50 years old, and over the coming 2 to 3 years, we intend to replace almost the entire capex of the government printing works with modern equipment. And you can see that it requires considerable expenditure, 180 million rand in the coming financial year, and you can see the figures over the MTEF. The funds to achieve that, we do already have in our budget. It does not require extra income from the natural capital expenditure, so that's also the formation of the third class. Now, I've talked about the strategic outcome-oriented goals of GPW, or three of them, beginning with the strategic outcome-oriented goal of developing the government components, then secondly, optimizing process capability, then thirdly, develop workforce. But in terms of the actual strategic objectives, these are outlined in the following slides and split into four branches of GPW. So 18 strategic objectives in the four branches of GPW. The first branch is the branch of operations and production, which is headed by Mr. Joe Engelbrecht. And the strategic objective 1.1 is to have functional and secure production facilities. And the objective is to occupy functional and secure production facilities. The current building is not suitable for development of a secure printing facility. And the current multi-level building is not conducive to a production to production efficiency. Strategic objective 1.2. Strategic objective 1.2 is in terms of production equipment. And the objective is to acquire modern production equipment to satisfy all state security printing requirements. When we talk about state security printing requirements, we're referring to passports, ID documents, faced with ID smart cards over the coming 3 to 5 years. And this strategic objective has a justification of improving efficiency to enable cost-effective production. The state requires continuous improvement and innovation of the security of these documents, relying on most advanced equipment and technology. And so since 2009, for example, we introduced the new South African passport, which to date has not successfully been forged. And from July 2013, the Minister of Home Affairs will be launching the new South African ID smart card. The current ID documents are subject to rampant forgery and identity theft, etc., costing citizens and institutions of this country hundreds of millions of rands annually. The new ID smart card will be extremely difficult to forge, and we hope will eliminate most of that identity theft and fraud. Strategic objective 1.3 in production operations is the production of security printed material. As I mentioned, this is about producing security printed materials according to customer requirements and local and international standards at the most cost-effective manner and within agreed delivery time. And our intent is to produce 100% of the security products within the targeted time frame. The objective is important due to its contribution and influence on national security of the state via the design, development, and production of secure documents. Areas of impact include identity fraud, economic and academic fraud, and immigration-related issues. Some of the products in terms of security printed materials include not only the passport and the smart card that will be coming soon, but also the new unabridged birth certificate that the Minister of Home Affairs launched in March 2013, and also a new asylum seeker permit, which will be extremely difficult to forge, which the Department of Home Affairs is launching. Then strategic objective 1.4 in production operations is about operational and control processes. The objective is to develop and maintain all operational and control processes to safeguard the integrity of security material. The objective is to strive to measure set standards to ensure in line that they are in line with best practices in insecurity reduction process. Those are the strategic objectives in terms of production operations. In the second branch of GPW, strategic management, there are various strategic objectives. Strategic Object 1.5 is the coordination and distribution of government information. And the objective is to ensure effective and efficient coordination and distribution of government information to the public. And this particularly includes the government gazette, both in printed format and the electronic government gazette. Through effective and efficient coordination and distribution of government information, the GPW complies with its mandate and provides improved customer service. Strategic Objective 1.6 within strategic management is the availability of information and communication technology services. And as I mentioned, printing companies, both in the private sector and the public sector, no longer print only paper, they also print on other materials such as polycarbonate, but they also provide information and communication technology services. Now, in this respect, we use ICT both in terms of our internal business processes and also in terms of the goods and services we provide. So internally, we have launched in October 2012 an enterprise resource planning system which integrates management information flow between our financial services and our production services. We're busy consolidating this and it's going well. This will contribute towards the business continuity of GPW. Strategic Objective 1.7 in strategic management is about a secure ICT environment. And the intent is to provide a secure ICT environment, and that will be achieved partly through the ERP system. And this will contribute to enable an environment in which GPW can fulfill its mandate to design, develop, and produce secure documents and execute effective and efficient business processes. Strategic Objective 1.8 in strategic management is about continuous printing process improvement. And that what this means is providing a framework for continuous printing process improvement. And that includes implementing the ERP system. And the objective is important due to its contribution to enable an environment in which GPW can fulfill its mandate to design, develop, and produce secure documents and execute effective and efficient business processes. Strategic Objective 1.9 is about ICT support services. A modern print and media company cannot run without optimized ICT support services. And this includes the ERP system that was launched in October last year. And this objective is important due to its contribution to enable effective and efficient business processes and internal customer satisfaction. And then Strategic Objective 1.10 is about the awareness of GPW. We intend to raise and increase awareness of the government printing work, including our new and improved production capacity and capabilities. Obviously, as a security printer, there are limits to how one wishes to increase awareness of the company. But nevertheless, we are implementing a marketing branch to raise awareness of the products and services delivered by GPW. Awareness both within the government departments that we serve, as well as among the general public in South Africa, as well as among possible customers overseas, particularly in Africa. Strategic Objective 1.11 is about product mix diversification. And this is about diversification of product mix within security printing. I've mentioned how security documents are now not only printed on paper, but also on media such as polycarbonate. And it will be important for the marketing branch to establish or help establish what that product mix will be. And this is in order to ensure sustainability and continuous growth of the business. And then strategic one, 1.12 is about developing and implementing a marketing strategy. A marketing strategy is important to retain and grow the market and to ensure sustainability and continued growth of the business. And then 1.13 is about the security risk management system. The objective is to develop and implement a security risk management system. And we're in the process of developing our security risk management plan. And this is in order to ensure the vision of being the state mandated security printer. And then strategic objective 1.14 under strategic management is about providing independent and objective assurance and consulting services to management. And this includes issues such as internal audit, ensuring that we comply with legislation such as PFMA, and ensuring that there are adequate and effective internal controls and governance processes for GPW. In the third branch of GPW, financial services, the strategic objective, 1.15, is of financial and supply chain management. And GPW aims to provide quality financial and supply chain management services in compliance with legislation and with clients' needs to contribute towards financial sustainability. In this respect, we have obtained over 3 years specific unqualified audit opinions. It's necessary to ensure that financial resources are managed in accordance with legislation and sound financial management practices to contribute towards financial sustainability. The fourth branch of the government printing works is human resources. And strategic objective 1.16 is to ensure adequate and trained workforce. The provision of adequately trained employees to support the organization towards growth and sustainability. There is an approved organizational structure, and we have drafted human resource policy and ensured that we obtain training results to ensure that our workforce is effective and capable in a modern printing company. And then 1.17, I've mentioned, is a strategic objective of attaining a special remuneration dispensation from the Department of Public Service Administration. So we have designed and are negotiating a special remuneration dispensation with the PFA. Remuneration benchmarking has been completed, and we intend to cascade this to various roadways and decision making. And the purpose of this is to retain skills and sustain the organization. Modern technology companies need to adequately remunerate their employees in order for their business to prosper and grow. And then strategic objective 18 under human resources is about developing and implementing labor relations and employee wellness management policies, processes, and programs. We intend to enhance sound labor relations between the employer and employees, and implement employee assistance wellness frameworks and programs. And this is to ensure sound regulation and well-supported staff. So that describes the three strategic outcome-oriented goals and also the 18 strategic objectives within the four branches of the government printing works. But just to highlight some of the key projects within the coming financial year, 2013-2014, and over the MTEF, the 5 years from 2013 to 2018. The first is the installation and commissioning of a new security printing division, which is housed mainly in Pavilion 2 at Bizarre Street. And I think you'll see when you visit our facility, honorable members, that this is a state-of-the-art facility, the security printing division and also the passport factory. Equal to anything you will find anywhere in the world. The second key project is of manufacturing the new national ID smart card for Department of Home Affairs. The Minister of Home Affairs intends to launch this probably in July 2013. And over the following 3 to 5 years, 38 million ID smart cards will be produced at the GPW facility in Starkey Street in order to replace all the ID books that are currently produced by South African citizens. We'll also be producing some form of card for permanent residents and also for refugees. But the new ID smart card, which I can pass around so that the honorable members can see it, incorporates a contactless microchip that will ensure that the card can be used not only for securing the identity of government citizens, but also for accessing government services, be they accessing electronic health records, or for e-voting, or for whatever purpose government determines that this card can be used for. It has over 20 security features which will make it extremely difficult to forge, and will be equal to any ID smart card that you get anywhere in the world. And through the tender process, we've managed to ensure that the cost of production will ensure that the cost to the citizen will be equal to that of the ID book, approximately 140 rand, which compared to international best practice is remarkable. The German ID smart card, for instance, costs in the region of 80 euros, almost 1,000 rand. And I understand that the Department of Home Affairs intends that the first issue of the ID smart card to citizens will be free, and thereafter replacement, etc., will cost in the region of 140 rand. The third major project that is underway is the implementation of the electronic cassette, which began a little last year, and we hope that the honourable members, as they use the government cassette, will increasingly use the electronic version in order to ensure accessibility and also to save paper. This will be used both in order to access the government cassette through the electronic format, as well as to submit items to be printed in that electronic cassette. The fourth major project is to create the capacity to print passport visa pages in-house. And so we will soon issue an international tender for the provision of an Intaglio printing machine. These machines cost in the region of 30 to 80 million rand. And they print Intaglio. Intaglio is a sort of tactile surface that you can feel on banknotes or on the inside pages of the newspaper and passport. And its purpose is security. It's very difficult to forge Intaglio printing. One requires huge outlay in terms of machines, and those sort of machines are only sold to banknote companies and government printers. The fifth major project is in terms of, intended printer, by the way, will be used to print visa pages for the visitors to South Africa. Visa pages that will be extremely difficult to afford and will be equal in quality to the Schengen visa that's used in Europe, etc. And then this major project is the implementation of the new ERP system. This enterprise resource planning system ensures integration of management information flow between our financial services and our production system, and also through to human resources as well, and will ensure efficiency and effective services internally within GDP. And then, sixthly, I mentioned the development of a new facility at the Sahi Street, which is facing challenges due to problems at the Department of Public Works. We have the money within our budget to complete the renovation of that facility, and we hope that that will be complete by the end of 2015, so that the entire organization can move there into renovated facilities, utilizing new state-of-the-art machines. And then, seventhly, then a major project which will begin later this year is of building a polycarbonate card manufacturing plant at Visakha Street. This was an instruction from the Minister of Home Affairs, who wished that all the process of producing a ID smart card would be in-house from the time of utilizing the raw polymer, polycarbonate, through to producing a personalized ID smart card. The entire process will be in-house in a secure facility at Visakha Street, minimizing the possibility of fraud or identity theft. In addition, the Department of Home Affairs is rolling out throughout its 400 offices in South Africa and 100 or so consular embassies around the world, a system of live capture whereby a paperless system of obtaining an ID smart card will be introduced, where the citizen attends the Home Affairs office and within a kiosk has a digitized photograph taken, have an electronic signature taken, and electronic fingerprints. All the digitized information is then immediately downloaded to the government printing works service at the Sarkar Street to produce the ID smart card within 24 hours. There will then be a mailing solution at the GDW facility which will ensure that the cards of the citizens can then be posted back to the particular Home Affairs branch at which they obtain the card. So the turnaround time could be as low as 48 hours and certainly less than 5 days from the time one applies for a smart card to the time that one can pick that smart card up from the Home Affairs office where one applies. It also makes it impossible for corrupt officials to insert another photograph or whatever in order to obtain a fraudulent ID smart card. I think I'll hand over to the General Manager for Financial Services, Mr. Barnard, to go through some of the financial matters within our strategic plan.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm not going to spend too much on this slide. Basically, this slide is illustrating over the NTF, the different equipment that GPW envisages to procure and improve our processes. Maybe just coming back to the strategic objectives that the professor talked about, in order to compile our budget, we need to understand that all these objectives need to dovetail all the time. Otherwise, it doesn't serve any purpose. For example, if we procure this equipment, you need to have the facilities in order to put that equipment. Even if we have the equipment and the facilities, we need to have the people who can operate that equipment. So all these things need to work together all the time. We can't currently procure most of these machines that sit in Boston Street for the simple reason that some of it is extremely, will be taking a huge risk by positioning a machine in Boston Street and then later on decide to move it to different levels. It could imply that that machine can no longer work for various things. So the best way to do this is to put the machine down where the machine is going to do the work. So it's very important that we understand that all the machines that we put in to secure the list, or that we plan to secure the list of the NTF, is dependent upon the facilities being ready. Just as far as the budget itself is concerned, as far as the income side is concerned, I think the professor alluded to the fact that when the business plan of the GPW was written in 2008, it was from the government to funding. Part of the requirement was that we would get some funding from the fiscus, especially as far as the passport tracking is concerned, and as far as the asset replacement program is concerned, and then thirdly also as far as the facilities are concerned. At that stage we estimated that besides the passport tracking itself, but the other equipment it's going to cost in the region of about 500 million, and we estimated that the facilities in South Africa are going to cost in the region of 900 to 1 billion. And that was part of the request in 2008-09 to the system. So far, if you look at the transfers and sheets that the GPW has received and you take out what was specifically earmarked for the new passport tracking, we received just over 400 million. And as the professor said, in 2013-15, we've already agreed with the National Treasury that they can take those transfers out. Which in effect then means that we would have received roughly about 400 million of the 500 million for the equipment, but then the 900 to the billion for the facilities we will fund ourselves and we don't need the money that we actually requested in 2008-09. As far as the revenue is concerned, the revenue figures that you see on this particular chart is the revenue that we derive ourselves. You will see that the revenue goes up quite significantly, up from 12.13 to 13.14. Part of that reason is exactly the rollout of the ID smart card. But in saying that, when we prepared the budget and the plan, we took a conservative view because we didn't have how the new ID smart card is going to be rolled out. So we took the conservative view that it's going to be rolled out at the same rate as the currently issuing IDs, and that's in the region of about 2.4 million a year. So we still need to get to the final rollout plan, and then these budgets will change significantly again, depending on how that rollout is going to manifest itself in practice. So if we get to the stage where we issue 5 million, maybe even 9 million a year, obviously all the figures will change significantly. But I think if you look at our cash situation at the moment, GW is in a good cash position, so it can fund the ID smart card without any assistance from the business. If you look at the expenditure side, basically the same principle applies, that you keep the conservative view about it. But I think the one thing I wanted to highlight, which the professor also mentioned, was the whole issue about the employee benefits. You'll see that there's a substantial increase in what we estimate for over the MTF as far as remuneration is concerned. I think that's one of the key issues facing the GPW at the moment, that we can't attract the same with the skills that we require. We need to understand that in the current environment, with the equipment that we have at the Boston Street is very labor intensive, equipment is very old equipment. But all the new equipment that we procure is technology-based. So it's really high-tech equipment, and we need specialized skills. So we estimate that the remuneration, if we need to come in line with the market, is going to increase significantly. As part of the administration expenses, you will also see those increases there. That's where the training portion that Prof spoke about. Currently we're spending quite a lot of money on our current workforce. Just to give you an idea, that on the ERP implementation last year, we went through extensive training programs as far as basic computer literacy, for example, and even in getting back to the ERP systems. So we're spending quite a lot of money on training our people, and that's going to continue in the future. The other thing I just wanted to mention is increases, significant increases, in, obviously, in the depreciation and provisions. Depreciation obviously will increase significantly when we procure all the new equipment, and that's why you'll see that the estimated will go from 89 million to about 169 million at the end of the year. And I think I will conclude with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you, Mr. Bain. Honourable members, that was the input by GPW. I'm sure members can also see the difference that the GPW is doing. We commend you for your lovely presentation and report you. Like GPW material. The material is very good and we are interested. And you mentioned that something like 2014 you won't be getting transfer from National Center or something like that. If you could explain further, because I didn't actually get what was happening. My understanding was that this is a good year to transfer from Home Affairs. But you will respond. I thought we get your funding from locally, where are you operating from? Is it from Santa Cruz or I don't understand whether other do you have two areas where you're operating from? And then employee benefits, especially the retention of skilled people. Are you surviving or what is that in respect to the retention of the skilled people, because we wouldn't like to, I mean, people to be going to greener pastures. I thought as a government component you are not able to manage the, you know, the private sector. Maybe you could explain as to whether are you are you coping or you still living with other chicken for you? But I remember the increase from the GPW. Can I know the honorable African, honorable minister, honorable Marcella, honorable director, honorable minister? We will know the question and respond at the end.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. You say that you are very impressed, Chairperson, with the format of the presentation, but as I always say, you expect nothing less from government printing. They do the printing. I would like to also to congratulate you with the new banknotes. You are printing this time. Oh my word. Oh my word. Then you have to take over that function. It's a reserve bank. Oh, I see. No, a terrible mistake. I thought I credited you with that. Because I actually like the new banknotes. Not everyone likes them. So let's go to the first question. Is that clearly you will be making some revenue, generate some revenue that would be above your expenditure and capital investments. Where does that money go? Does it go back to the national fiscus or what exactly happens to that? Secondly, there is 70% growth in the other objectives program. What? How is this? What comprises this 70% growth as far as that is concerned? And thirdly, I'd like to ask. It seems that according to the strategic plan, that the special remuneration dispensation has not been approved or implemented yet. But yet there is a 13% above inflation growth in average income of level 1 to 6 employees in the estimate of national expenditure. How do you explain that? Then I also want to know how you are progressing regarding the filling of vacancies, because that has been quite a problem, and we actually directed you to, you know, when we see you again, we don't want to have all these vacancies, and that you must account to us in terms of how you fill the vacancies. And then lastly, why do you have a strategic objective baseline of an unqualified audit and not a clean audit? Because I would think that whilst one can understand that it's more difficult to achieve in some departments like education, home affairs, and health and so on, in your particular department, it should actually be quite easy in a sense to achieve a clean audit. Because it's not, you know, it would just seem to me to be a cleaner kind of an operation, easier kind of situation to achieve a clean audit. So why do you stick to a second best option of an unqualified audit and not a clean audit?
much more information to share, which is very much helpful to us as a community. And obviously, one question is the inequity which the members have spoken about, of more than 13% above inflation, and how the government has been working, looking at finding that if this inflation does not come to force. I think that is a tricky, it's a catch-22 situation. So you will pray that it comes to force, and if the prayers are not answered, what are you going to do? The other area which is quite very concerned, and obviously, it was page 23, out where you are saying that you are in the process of developing security risk management. I would hope and wish that by now, that's how you are before you are operating. But that then already be said, not that you are trying to do it now. And obviously, on page 24, on page 29 of the presentation, the special remuneration presentation, if you are, as I've alluded to earlier, going to start implementing this later in the year, what do you think will be the time frame in terms of putting it into action? Should this be accessible? Are you going to do it immediately, or are you going to give it time before you implement it? Because what one picks up in the presentation is that you are putting it up immediately soon after the agreement has been reached, and now the question is what are those areas? Page 31, which is my last question. How much is it cost to establish the polycarbonate plant, which is a carbon manufacturing plant? I see that you have put some figures in the outside of the presentation, but I would assume that there are other costs that would be required from the outside if one has invested, having this as an in-house instead of getting these services of manufacturing from outside. So, which is the question really is taking a response of the immediate need. If you are saying that you're going to implement this from July, then the question is how are you going to deal with all of that if the plan is going to come in effect later, and how much it costs now and then. And is this the amount on passport factory on page 32? Is this the amount of 51 million in the outside of 15 and 16? Is this linked to the amount of, is this linked to the price that is on page 31 of the polycarbonate cluster, or is this something else that is different today? And that obviously will try some of the response in my question. Thank you, sir.
I'm not sure we should do that and first report and then I will take the honorable director and honorable government. Allow me to do that, honorable minister. Thank you. You may respond to my question.
Thank you, honorable chairperson, honorable members. We'll respond to these questions and I'll ask our members, my chief, to respond to specific questions. In terms of transfers from National Treasury, and do they come from Treasury or from Home Affairs, the absence of transfer to 2040, I'll ask Mr. Barnard to answer that question.
Thank you, Chair. The received transfers from National Treasury, that's the way we see it, but we just received it because we linked the government component to Home Affairs, so we get it via Home Affairs, as we don't have a vote. So we receive it. So if you go to the vote of Home Affairs, there's a specific fund earmarked for itself. So the leader guidance coming from the first instance via Home Affairs. far as the chances are concerned, we basically agreed that from the last outer year, or the year that we entered in now, 13-14, would be the last year that we would receive any bonds. That would make up roughly about the 400 million that I spoke about earlier. And from here on onwards, as well as the money that's actually acquired from the facility, we agreed that that's no longer needed. We will fund that ourselves. So I hope that's clear. So, in the last couple of years, I think from a financial perspective, the GPW has performed well in such an extent that we do have the next funding to embark on these projects ourselves and don't need any money from the business.
And then in terms of the question about how far along we are in terms of the equipment replacement program and when do we operate from Boston Street or Mizrahi Street, perhaps the end of restaurant plan.
Thank you, Chief. This is Honorable Members. The main plant of the government cooking works is situated at the Bosman Street facility. Now, it is a fully fledged printing facility in the sense that we provide in all disciplines, such as origination, printing, and also then the finishing component of printing. With the development of the Tsaki Street site, it's really an old building which must be renovated before we can move in. Now, at present we have situated only our passport factory there. The new ID card production facility will be situated there, and then we have a security printing facility at Tsaki Street. The remainder of the main part where we still do the origination and the binding and the big printing presses are still situated in Boston Street. And we are not in a position to move those or to actually develop or buy new equipment, new printing presses until such time when the Tsaki Street site has been developed. It's quite an involved process. For example, the floor that is currently in the old government garage is not suitable to house heavy presses, so that the construction includes digging that up, putting proper reinforced flooring in, and really the development there will actually set the pace at which we can replace equipment. When one positions a heavy printing press on a floor, although a floor might look very straight and smooth, it's never straight and smooth. So the machine will settle into a specific manner once it starts working on a floor. Therefore, it's not a good idea to buy an expensive press, set it in a building, and at a later stage try and move it. The press will lose its quality. As far as available money, of course we can accelerate the equipment replacement program, but that would not make sense unless we have an area where we can actually position the equipment.
In terms of the question from the Honourable Chairperson concerning employee benefits and are we surviving in terms of retaining skilled staff, and also are we able to match the private sector and the government component?
In terms of majority, I need a short background in terms of the vacancy. Also to answer some other members' question on vacancy rates. The structure that you've got started to start with, it was based on the new, on the premise that we're going to move to a new premise, and that the functions will be then affected in the new area. However, at this moment, we were lucky this year and this current financial year, as well as this financial year, that we haven't lost quite many skilled workforce. This year, we've only lost two artisans so far to our competitors, which one is the National Company of South Africa. Because we have got a loyal workforce, we are surviving. However, we put quite a research into it, because it's really full hard to get the innovation going. And we thank them for doing that. In terms of of the education based positions, we are still only 8 out of 33 posts are filled. Our year 9 posts were since been advertised. Hopefully will be filled by the end of June, July. 5 more posts have been identified filled over the next 6 months as well, which will be advertised in April. I'm working in finance, so unit as well as operations and production. In terms of the vacancies in other areas, are the current vacancy rate in the system is 75%, which is extremely high, and we said last time we were going to be able to work on it. Unfortunately, the appointment of the general manager, strategic management, and the resources were delayed. However, that is now back on track, since I think already later that we had interviews with general manager strategic management. Paperwork will reach cabinet next week for a decision in terms of appointing the person, and surely as soon as the OIFA is on board, that post of the strategic management will be filled. In terms of power vacancies, it's up 22%, which is current vacancy. That is the rate of your lower level loans. In this financial year, we are very much for new appointments and promotions of the GDW. We have been making progress regarding the filling of our course with the organization. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And so in terms of matching the private sector, we are unable to match the private sector. Most of our skilled staff tend to go to the South African banking company, which is able to offer salaries that are outside the dispensation of the Public Service Administration, and also we do staff to NISA Press, who can pay what they wish to pay. We, however, are bound by the regulations in the Public Service Administration. Just to answer a question that comes later, what will we do if we are not granted a special site dispensation? Well, the other option would be that the government component of GBW becomes a state-owned enterprise, such as Telcom or SAA or PRASA or whatever, in which case there would be more flexibility in pay. But at the moment, our strategy is to negotiate through our minister with the Department of Public Service Administration for a special salary dispensation. The question concerning from Honourable Manisi, whether we will be becoming self-sustainable by 2040-2015, and if so, will we be profitable, and if we are making profits, what will we do with profits? Perhaps I can ask Mr. Barnard to answer that question.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. Maybe I can sort of try and answer a few of the questions. As far as the income is concerned, I think if we look at the last couple of years and the financial results of the GPW since 2009, I think we've already shown without the policies that we are sustainable and that we are profitable, and that's why we'll have things like, for example, we've improved our cash balance significantly, and that's due to the profits we made. And just in the previous 2 financial years, we've made in the region, each year, we've made in the region about 12 million profits. This year it will be a little bit down due to other factors, but I think as far as sustainability is concerned, we are already there. We don't, that's why we've agreed especially as to the years onwards that we don't get that strong economy. As far as what happens to those profits and whether we keep it or not, at the moment the only way we can deal with that is that we apply yearly to national treasury to keep those funds in order to recapitalize the business. And so far they've every year allowed us to keep them, and they've never repaid us. I know it's getting to a situation now where the fiscus is actually looking for more profitable revenues. I can't say that will continue in the future, but we will certainly hope so. Our budget was built on the premise that we will be able to do that because we've got the funding requirements going into the future, especially as far as equipment and filling. Maybe I can address also the issue about part of the issue in the GPW is I think one must realize that it might seem, at least from a financial perspective, that it is a simple organization, but it's not that simple. For the pure reason that we actually competing except for security products like IDs and passports, but all the other work we compete with the private sector. So we compete on equal footing. And you have a customer need, and you still need to comply with all the necessary regulations, rules and regulations, and especially the cost of procurement policy. So the qualified, the baseline that we've got here is our baseline, because we've got unqualified. But we still have, in the previous year, one or two other methods arriving, like, for example, overtime issues, and the vacancies, and all that kind of thing. And that's why, from a financial perspective, we just use the unqualified opinions. Because these days, in all opinions, you can get to the performance information one of these days, well, not this year, but probably next year, with the general can assess an opinion about the performance information, and that can also lead to a qualified opinion. And that's why this one was specifically talking about the unqualified response of financial portions. But this, I just want to make the point that I think we've got various challenges, because if a client walks in the village department, and we get that often on a daily basis, as we need to compete with the private sector, we need to ensure that our systems and our policy and procedures are such a nature that we don't contain any rules and regulations. Because at the time we're seeing this specific work to be done, and if you can't provide that service within a specific time frame, then we're going to come to the private sector. And that's what we need to compete with. And that's what I think some days it's extremely difficult, especially as far as procurement.
Honourable Councillor asked about the time frame for the special remuneration dispensation. We had hoped that the trust team between GPW and Public Service Administration would have delivered the report last December to the Minister of Public Service Administration. As I said, there have been delays in that. We hope that the report will be delivered soon, and that the Minister will make a decision. And so in our budget for the year 2013-2014, there is an assumption that the dispensation will be granted, and we factored in the net increase in the employee benefits as such. If we do not receive this special dispensation, as I mentioned, then the other, of course, the approach is to see if the state would permit the GPW to convert from a government component to a state-owned enterprise. In terms of the Honourable Trotter's question about the cost of the carbon plant and whether the budget of 51.4 million in 2015-16 is for that, and are there any other costs, and what happens if we don't construct the carbon plant in time to provide blank carbon cards. I also should ask Mr. Engelbrecht to answer the question.
Thank you. In order to meet the deadline for implementation of the new ID card, as set by the Department of Public Health, of course there is not sufficient time to implement this plant and to produce the card locally. So what we've done is, we have completed the tender process where we identified a suitable supplier that will produce these cards until such time when the government printing works is in a position to produce the cards in-house. Now, the 51 million that we see, this is the estimate that we have for producing the plant, for procurement of the equipment. However, there is substantial cost involved, which is not included in the 50 million, that substantial cost involved in preparing the plant, the facility where you put this this equipment. It has to be completely dust-free, almost like in the pharmaceutical industry, in a very expensive facility to construct. At this moment, we have no input as to what the cost of that development might be. but to build the facility where you put the equipment should not be less than at least another 50 million. Now, the tender that we awarded now for the supply of the polycarbonate cards, by provision for the fact that there will be a transfer of skills, from the supplier will now provide the ID cards to the government printing works at the time when we are ready to produce the card ourselves. So there will be a skills transfer between the supplier and the government printing works at the pace at which we can accommodate it. Because to produce polycarbonate is a very complex material. And then at the time when we are in a position to produce the card without outside input, of course, at that moment, we will stop procuring the card from the supplier.
Honourable Costello asked about our security risk plan. Yes, perhaps we didn't phrase it correctly. We do have a security risk plan implemented, but it is undergoing a process of being updated, and that will need to be approved and ratified. But we already do have a security risk plan and strategy with which we do implement in order to protect our premises and to ensure that passports and ID documents are not stolen from the government. The Honourable Peterson asked about vacancies in respect of people living with disability and also in terms of the workforce, how do you develop our workforce? Perhaps Ms. Lucas so could answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of disability, for the IMP, 2%, we are 1.8 at the moment in terms of disability. However, the positions we targeted when we can in terms of disability people. We're going to be comforting in the past year in terms of operation, also we make most of our housing appointments and their assistance. There were not positions earmarked for disability people with disabilities. Secondly, in terms of the development of workforce, we are referring here to is that government work will implement the new ERP system as well as the introduction of new printing equipment. We need a different skill set within the organization. And that's where we said that we would like to have a proper developed workforce to meet the demands of HPW for future years that's coming. That's why, in terms of the ERP station this year, we are spent on the space and training, and also in terms of for the new equipment, partnership and so forth. That's it. And also to make sure that you can have a sustainable in the future. That's why not only in your areas of operation production and the financials, but also in resource management, that you need a workforce that can take the other forward and also make sure that it's sustainable. Thank you. Thank you.
Similar companies as you printed. Are you going out to the private sector case was prohibited, are you able to actually suspend the whip and meet their deadline and so forth, because the private sector environment is very different from that of government. So perhaps you just contact that first. Then, assuming this special dispensation program is to make salaries competitive to private sector. That's not just to understand if that's the case. And then, in your budget, you're talking about oxygen, you spend $10 million on staff development and so forth. Can you just unpack what that is? Are you sending some of your staff to formal courses at university or taking consulting cases? Does it involve in house? I presume there's a combination of all that. Just tell us a little more about that. And in the cases where your staff, your officials are going to get formal training and then re-verification, I'm presuming there's some kind of payback that they're required to work for the new entity for a certain amount of period and so forth. So just tell us about that. Then, I'm just a little unsure about this, the moving of the building. I understand that your present building isn't suitable. So, in my understanding, if you're going to a new building, is it a new lease that you'll be taking on? What happens to the old building? That kind of thing. You might be interviewing questions, but I suspect you think it's going to happen before I was around, so just for my education. And then, talk about using 31 million ID smart cards, which is a place number. Over what period would this be? I presume the department's given these kind of time frames and so forth. And again, I'm presuming that you will have the capacity once you complete the white card and so forth. And what happens if you can't keep to the deadline for the volume that the department is asking you to do? I'm interested in the implementation of the e-billets. I presume you'll be marketing to more people like me who want to be as paperless as possible. You'll be telling us how we can access it, use it, interact with it, and so forth. We'll talk a little bit about that. And I think that's actually my other question for Oscar. Thank you so much.
Mr. Rich,
what
thank you, Chair. We are looking at our thinking out there. Is this understanding that when you talk about printing, it's all about mails, and it's only, you know, certain people, certain colors. That can only work. And people out there are supposed to see when you talk about printing. Now I'm sitting here and I think it's only and the thing is coming back into my mind today. And if I go through the trend, I'm asking myself, especially, is there anything that is in the environment that is showing change the mindset within the time you don't see anything that is done. And it also applies to the other element that I raised in terms of what we want to see happening in our country, in our focus, all of us. So we need to see ourselves participating in all strategic areas and then more equivalent, more same recognition given to each one of us, irrespective of color, irrespective of gender, and so on and so forth. Is there something like that in the list or in the way? Things are fine. And then the question is, when do you think you're going to start working on that? other thing is that we speak about training your workforce, and I'm thinking, now when you talk training, you're talking, you know what happens with the train? There's a day, and then there's all these couches following. Then you are training them not to follow. But there's a difference between training and development. Because if you train, you just teach that person how you should keep on the, you know, on the route to where we are going. But if you develop that person, you then say, once you understand that you need to go this direction, but with or without the game, you can still stand on yourself and do the things that you're supposed to do. And I think that's another notion that I keep, that is missing in our strategic plan. Again, we have the objective, our strategic objective, but earlier on in some few years back, we agreed that we need to have an outcome-based kind of a strategic plan that we develop a department and section within departments or entities. But I don't see anything that talks about the outcome. I see that we have a good objective, but what is it that I'm going to want at the end of all that? What you will be doing, any tangible thing that I will be holding and say this is the outcome of the train that I've been doing. I don't get that in the train. Now, the president of this country, the president of all of us, made it a state of the nation address where he actually based himself on a national development strategy. The strategic plan doesn't say a thing about that in terms of saying here are the 6 pillars within the national development plan. As government thinking, when we talk about faster growing economy and an inclusive one, this is how we're going to ensure that that happens. When we talk about uniting the nation, this is what we think is going to help us get there. When you talk about building a capable developmental state, this is where as the tradition is, we think our contribution will be. So that we move along as one towards a certain goal. We don't feel that our 6 within the 17 strategic intervention projects, where do we fit? Are we facing or not? These are the issues that I think we're supposed to be made visible here. There's something that again we were saying as government meeting, that you are going to ensure security of the features of the smart and app. Are we allowed to view those security features? And if we are, can we then distribute and ensure that every media paper and the both printing, audio, media, our community, they know about these features? Are we allowed to disclose these features to them if we are allowed to know about them? And Chair, I know why I'm asking this question. Very critical question. Can we expose the security features to them?
Thank you.
Thank you,
First of all, a question from one of the phrases concerning self-sustainability, which we hope to achieve by 2014-15. The question was how we imagine that and what to do, right? That's the Dr. Zabana to answer the question.
Yeah, I think in order to answer this question, I think it's really difficult to say. Except maybe to say we're fine. We're not there yet. I think we should be. I think what financial administration thing. I think areas that we still need to evolve upon is to proper financial management, which is a totally different subject. But I think I'm also saying to you that I think that I think the basic that we're doing, but there's still a lot of other things that we need to improve on. So if you ask me what is the answer to the question or the answer is basically we try and understand this particular example, but we try to do our jobs. That's all we try to do. And as far as sustainability is concerned, I think that is something as far as the budget is concerned that I submitted to you today, we need to understand if we run on normal building principles, that is a plan. But when we get to the execution of that plan, for example, we need to acquire equipment, we need to, on that day, when we make a decision to acquire that equipment, we need to have a business case for that equipment that day. And we need to then take into account all the factors that's prevalent in that day. You can't say because you've got a budget you need to spend it. You can't work according to that principle. Because actually, you've got a plan and you don't have the money. You still need to motivate that money in order to do further expenses. And that's what I want to do.
In terms of Arnold's raised question about marketing, we have advertised for a marketing specialist, and hopefully he or she will join us soon. And that will be critical in terms of marketing, firstly to government departments and to parliamentarians, particularly in terms of marketing the e-gazette, and we will ensure that we have roadshows and that the other. In terms of marketing to stakeholders in the private sector, our strategy is not really to compete with the private sector as such, but what we do find is that government departments often ask us to undertake work that hitherto they have outsourced the private sector. Sometimes that is because a government department can give us work without going to tender, and the work may be urgent and therefore they have to come to us. So Department of Basic Education, for example, have provided us with work of the order of 250 million over the past 6 months in terms of their work. And what we tend to find at the moment is that we actually have to subcontract a lot of work out to the private sector because we're still renovating the Sahi Street, we still haven't got those machines in, and there's some work that is more difficult for us to do, and so we often subcontract out to the private sector. But our prime purpose is not actually to compete with the private sector. In terms of marketing, our marketing specialist will go on road trips to Africa in order to market GPW services to other African countries. At the moment, we do produce the African Union passport, which has been adjudged as one of the 20 best passports in the world. And so we will continue to market our services. But we're not primarily in competition with the private sector as such. In terms of the special size dispensation, will that be competitive to the private sector? Mr. Rousseau has led a benchmarking exercise, and the benchmarking exercise has looked at the private sector, but it's also looked at government departments in general that are under public service administration, and also looked at other entities who attempt to poach our staff, or rather, attempt to recruit our staff. And they include, for instance, the South African Banking Company, but also Unison Press, which is opening a new press in Centura this year. And we often find that we are like an academy, a training ground. We train people, and then they move on to greener pastures. So we hope that a special style of dispensation will enable us to retain more of those scarce and specialist skills that we need. Staff development, the Honourable Fraser asked, what staff development do we do, and do employees have to work for the organization for a number of years in order to pay back for that? I'll ask Mr. Sir to answer that.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairperson. One question on the staff development. We comprise a number of interventions. One is in our training related by GWTV. Also, we can use outside service providers. It also includes bursaries that we count to our staff and things for training definitely for patients like a degree or honors. It also includes training of learners, apprentices. We recently advertised again for learners and help people process back in April to make a number of appointments. Especially here we're looking into doctors' youth. Also, it includes training abroad, for instance, the passport and country equipment, where our artists were sent to Japan as well as Germany for training. We also invest in the agreement of our staff that through the financial systems, they have to work back a number of years without me, based on either the situation of the grant ministry or in terms of the amount of income to the people.
The Honourable Fraser asked about the Sarkis Street. Is it a new building? Would it be on lease? Who does it belong to? And what will we be doing with the old building in Boston Street? Perhaps Mr. Engelbrecht can answer that question.
Thank you. The existing building that we have is a building that is in Boston Street. It's a very old building and it belongs to the Department of Public Works, so there is no lease people. If we move away from that building, we will simply hand it back to the Department of Public Works, of course, to deal with it the way they see fit. In terms of the development that we do in Busaki Street, again, it used to be the old government garage, dilapidated, and it belongs to the Department of Public Works. Now, because we pay for the development, we pay for the construction, I think at some stage the expectation would be that that facility ownership would be transferred to the government printing works as a government component, but there is no lease applicable. May I also, while I have the opportunity, just respond to one of the other questions that you had. The question related to the volume of identity documents to be produced. The equipment that we procure and which we expect to receive towards the middle of the year would have the capacity to produce roughly about 6 million ID cards in an ordinary 8-hour shift. Now, if we compare it with the current level of identity documents, which is approximately 2.2 million IDs per year, we use that figure to anticipate also specific growth so that we have sufficient equipment be able to deal with the ID cards as the population might grow over time. Now, the determining factor in terms of issuing these cards will actually lie with the Department of Public Affairs. As indicated by the CEO, the data for ID cards will be collected live at the front offices of the Department of Public Affairs. By indication, the citizen will go to the office, there will be an electronic document on the screen that needs to be filled out in terms of biographic details, taking of digital photographs, digital fingerprints, and so on. So it will really depend on the rate at which the department can capture this data and download it to the government. Now, if the department manages to exceed that 6 million, we simply need another shift. So in terms of capacity, our intention is to have a turnaround time of 24 hours similar to what we currently do with passports. In other words, all the application data which is processed by the Department of Public Affairs in a given day is downloaded onto our archive during the course of the day. The next morning we take that data, we produce the ID or the passport and we deliver it back to the department within 24 hours. In terms of our planning, it's very unlikely that the need from the department will exceed the capacity that we need. as a rule, security features are in three categories. Your category one security features are those security features which one wants everybody to know about. If it's an ID card, one would want the citizen to know about it, to be able to verify under natural light in the street whether the document is authentic. The second level of security features are normally those that one would have limited information in terms of the Department of Home Affairs, for example, if they need to check whether a document is authentic or not. The second level security features, as a rule, you cannot detect under natural light. You need some sort of a tool, not sophisticated tools, but tools like a magnifying glass, for example, ultraviolet light, and so on. So that level of access to those features, by the nature of it, would be a bit more limited. Then there are third level security features, which are on a forensic level, and these features are known or will be known only to a handful of people. If everything else fails, this card lands in the court for authentication. These are typically the features which we use for purposes of legal determination. As a rule, these features can only be verified in laboratory conditions. Now, the new ID card will conclude into security features on all three levels. So we will sit down with the Department of Home Affairs and together decide which of these features they wish to make to be made known to the public. And certainly those are features which will be published in the media, and information about it will become public. Thank you.
The Honourable Altman asked about the demography of this organization. The executive of the Government Printing Works consists of the CEO and four general managers. As I mentioned, we have appointed an African black female to the executive of general management, but that needs to be ratified by cabinet. We anticipate that within the coming months, the executive of five members will be 60% black and 40% female. In terms of the rest of the organization, in 1994, the Government Printing Works, I think, had about 1,000 employees and was 100% white and about 95% male. It has changed dramatically since then, including in the last 5 years. Perhaps I could ask Mr. Rousseau to say something about transformation aspects.
Just in terms of recruitment for current financial year, is that we have recruited all the permanent staff members, 91% were amongst blacks. We are unfortunately due to the scarcity of certain skilled partners in the labour market, about 9% were from the arts and white partners we've appointed. In terms of the management team working in operations production, that we two of the units working in operation production, your buying operations and your personation division are led by black females, and we have appointed in the past 2 years of promoting to that position. In terms of the rest of the production, especially of artisans, is that there's no more a dominated white group, and there are more black artisans than white artisans at the moment working in the printing operations, and in all the areas from human resources, financial services, we are targeting black employees for previous disadvantaged groups, to say it as that. Anyway, we are tracking terms of reaching the targets to make sure that we respect the demography of the country, and we are making fast progress in that regard. Thank you for this.
That's in terms of our employees. In terms of our business, and how much business we allocate to structured disadvantaged institutions, I'd like to ask Mr. Barnard to talk about our performance indicator in that regard.
Madam Chair, as far as we've moved over in line with the regulations to the new process and used the DE process in 2003. basically you will just go through the possess and you go through each event if you want to be possessed after you've registered and you will just download the event. But you will basically see on the e-possess one, you'll have all the possess links. The intention is not that we are trying to duplicate the function of the Department of Communication. So what we will have here is all the possess at least for the last 3 months. So we'll have a rolling 3 months. So if you want possess older than that, we're not trying to be a library, because we're not a custodian, for example, of Act. So if you look at an Act of 1970, you need to go to somewhere else. This is the last 3 months, rolling 3 months. So as you can see here, you'll have all the different gazettes, and you'll see, and then you can download the gazettes and print them yourself. So I don't want to download the news, newspaper, I don't want to download. It's going to take too long. And that's just about the gazettes. So the only issue would be to register. The plan of this is that, like Prof was saying in the presentation, that we still need to finalize this. We divided the e-gazette project into two. This is the output side. The other aspect is we still need to work on the input side. So, and that's where the huge part of the development line is how we receive the gazette and how we eventually get to this format. So our idea is that we need to streamline this and make it electronic so people submit it correctly and it comes through and it makes our cost much cheaper. At the moment it's very labor intensive and people need to keep track because we get the input into the gazette via various channels. It could be handwritten, it could be email, it could be the web, it could be anything, it could be GIF. So there's various channels that we get used to. So we want to streamline that whole process in order to make it more productive for the
users. The Honourable Bookman also asked about the strategic plan being more outcome-based. We tried to make it outcome-based in terms of the three strategic outcomes of developing government component, optimizing process of facilities, and developing workforce. But you'll see on page 7 of the annual performance plan that when we submit our plan to National Treasury for the estimate of national expenditure, we split them up into the 6 tangible products that are a core of our business: printing cassettes, printing security documents, following the ID smart card, printing of passports, printing of security papers, printing of other forms of documents, and other objectives. In terms of the National Development Plan, yes, indeed, we need to align our operations with the NDP and its 6 pillars. I think we could argue that much of what we do is in line with issues such as economic inclusiveness, uniting the nation through identity and this and that and the other, and also developing a capable developmental state. And an example would be the technology transfer in terms of being able to produce ID smart cards, being able to produce polycarbonate, etc. But I think, you know, the next iterations of a strategic plan that we bring to the committee, certainly we will address the NDP more explicitly. In terms of training, we totally agree with Honourable Bachman that, you know, training and is not necessarily always the same as development. We train our employees, but we also aim to develop our employees. And of course, that's critical in a company that's moving from being an old-fashioned printing company to being a modern printing media company. You need to have employees who develop their skills and their knowledge and continue to do so within the workplace and from year to year. Otherwise, as a technology-based company, one cannot really survive. And that development must be for all South Africans, black, white, male, female, etc.
Thank you. Responding to all the questions that people who are highly skilled, so that
treasury could allow you to remunerate or pay such people competitive salaries. I'm not sure if that was done or maybe I was doing something, but I thought we did mention something like that, that the treasury needs to be approached by DPW with regard to remuneration of the people with their IDs.
Well, as I said, engagement has been through the Minister of Home Affairs with the Minister of Public Service Administration about special salary dispensation. We didn't approach National Treasury directly as such. And indeed, under the new regulations, to approach National Treasury, we have to go through Home Affairs. We're not allowed to approach them directly.
Thank you. Perfect. Yeah, that's how it should be done. But thank you so much.
Thank you. can start with or continue with our meeting. The next presenter is SPB, and we'd like to welcome you, Chairperson, with your team, because we noticed that there are faces that we are not familiar with. I think it will be proper that we introduce ourselves to them so that they know who they are speaking to, and we are also get to know them. Some members are not here, but I think we will continue introducing ourselves. They will do that when they come. My name is Maggie Maunye.
I'm Paul Hasebonu.
Tell teacher Sam.
Nokaya Munisi.
Molwe. Masuzole Mnasel.
Morning, Manny DeFreitas, member of the committee.
Thank you. On my right, I have Mr. Eddie Matonzi, who is our committee secretary. Next to him is Mr. Adam Salmon, who is our researcher. Right at the end there, we have Nandipa, who is also one of our support staff. Chairperson, we welcome you and your team, and I hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. It is a pleasure for us to be here to present our 2013-14 up to 2018 strat plan. I would like to introduce our delegation as well, ma'am. My name is Thoko Mpumlwana. I'm the chairperson of the Film and Publication Board Council. And I have here on my right Mr. Nick Nichols. He is our chairperson of the audit committee. We have restructured a bit. We have got a council member as a chairperson of the audit committee, and we've got an outsider as an additional member for easy governance and management of information. We have Ms. Yoliswa Makasi, who is our CEO. We have Ms. Palisa Kadi, who is our executive shared services, who was quite instrumental in making sure that the strat plan is submitted. We have Mr. Teboho Matabane, who is our acting CFO. Our CFO was unable to come due to unforeseen circumstances, and we allowed him to go. Our CFO is Mr. Jonas Pushogo. And we have representing, we have Mlimandela. He's the man who is Prince Mlimandela Ndamase. He is a prince. He's our manager of communication and our spokesperson. He handles us very well. And we have representative from the ministry. We have a representative of the minister of the Department of Home Affairs, Mr. Luanda Franz. And we have a representative of the DM, Mr. Majid Mauser. Firstly, Chair, I did call you ahead of time to table our apology for a slight confusion that happened with the tabling of our strategic plan. We understand the matter was resolved. It was just a matter of ensuring that the legality of some of the matters in the strategic plan are tightened up by the ministry, to ensure that our plan synergizes with the legalities. We had a legal case arising from the SANEF, South African National Editors Forum, on the classification or pre-submission for classification of magazines, and that outcome caused us to have to redefine our role in terms of that. So that's just what they wanted to clarify, which was clarified, and it was then resubmitted. The document did not change, so that is the same document that was tabled before. Just to say that this plan we're tabling is linked to what we did last year and where we are in 2013-14. In last year, our partnership internationally, and our visibility as the Film and Publication Board have grown a lot. We are now recognized internationally as an entity that international bodies actually refer to sometimes when there are issues internationally related, especially to websites that host sites that are not acceptable, but also for some learning. And so people do come to us for some learnings and mutual sharing of information. We have finalized our turnaround strategy. Our outreach program has grown. Our new guidelines as a result of our turnaround strategy have been finalized in the 2012-13. Our classification rate has succeeded. We have new classifiers, as we said. We have ensured that we've got interns to make sure that we develop a layer of young people who may be enthused into the sector of film and publication, classification and regulation. Some of the challenges that we face include, of course, money. It's never enough. The new media space is another challenge that we continue to confront. The space out there is fast, very, very fast, and needs a lot of monitoring and new ways of doing things. Another one is outreach to 52+ million South Africans and the region of SADC. Because we are related and the borders are related, some of the things we regulate here just go outside of the border. So we need to enhance our relationship with our border. And the collection of revenue is another reality we've had to face in the previous year because of the economic downturn that has affected our industry. So we present our strategic plan in the hope that we will enhance the application of our new guidelines, and we have set money aside for that, that we will ensure we work smartly with working with partners a little more because of the budget that we have got. We are signing more MOUs, and we are mindful as well that our mandate of ensuring that we regulate but also protect children cuts across ministries. So we work very smartly now with basic education, with communications, and with other entities, and the Department of Women, Children, traditional leaders, and the industry. We have enhanced our international partnership, just to mention that we have been invited to go and present at a conference at the European Union Parliament because and share our learnings there because of the work that we do. And this plan also will share a little more on the new media space and how we plan to do that in our protection of children. We will enhance our research. We are tightening up the legislative review. Of course, the department is the lead department, but we'll inform, we've worked to inform the department on the areas that they have to tighten up. And we keep, we want to keep our interns, the program of interns in our strat plan because it has worked to upscale our work as well as monitoring and out there in the community and working with the security cluster, because the issue of the work we do is also more on the security of our people in terms of protection of children and the use of mobile phones that infringe on the rights of people. With those introductions, Chair, I would like to then ask the CEO to table the plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can I just ask, I see it's quite a large document. I'm just concerned that we run out of time, so if you could perhaps just keep the time aspects in mind, CEO, thanks.
Okay, Chair, can I just confirm how much time you are giving me for the presentation, Chair?
Yeah, well, not more than 20 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think the first aspect of the report, of the presentation, is what members of the committee know very well, which is around the FPB mandate. This hasn't changed in any way, so I will not go into detail. We still provide consumer advice. We still protect, aim to protect children from exposure to disturbing and harmful content. We still, our legislation makes use of children in their exposure to pornography punishable by law. Just in terms of some of the regulatory tools that we are using as a regulator, we classify the content using the guidelines that we developed once every 2 years, or we update once every 2 years. We do consumer education programs, we do compliance monitoring, we do some child protection initiatives like the hotline, where if people bump into cases of child pornography on the internet, they can communicate that information to the FPB. In terms of the vision, we've sharpened the vision a bit to indicate that we are informing and protecting adults through information, children and adults through information, but it's still more or less the same. Just in terms of the principles central to the regulation function that we do, as FPB, the protection of children from early exposure to adult material and use in child pornography productions, and then provision of consumer advice on media content, so we still inform, you choose. The third aspect is we provide designated areas for distribution of adult material, that is pornography. I'm sure what honorable members have been following the story about Top TV's application for approval of 3 new channels, adult channels, to broadcast adult content. We think that this provision in our legislation is going to be tested through this process. So we are awaiting to hear what decision ICASA gives to Top TV. We have made our own presentations, which have focused really on protection of children, the concerns around protection of children. But we are waiting. It is our understanding in terms of our legislation that if Top TV receives the approval from ICASA, they will have to register as a distributor with the Film and Publication Board, and we agree on how that content is distributed, understanding that it is digital content, some of it. So they don't have to submit copies to FPB, but we will agree on a mechanism that we have in place on how that content can be distributed. We don't know if Top TV will agree to that, but we do think that this particular principle will be tested a lot in respect to this issue. In terms of the values, they haven't changed: accountability, fairness, integrity, transparency, and professionalism. Just we put some information around the entertainment and media industry analysis. This information, Chair, I think we have shared with the board in the last, with Parliament in the last presentation we came to do in Parliament, and we had also sent some information as a follow-up to members of Parliament. So I will not go into detail in the information, except just to indicate that globally, there's, I think our industry is basically faced with a challenge to embrace the technology. There's so much technology, new technology issues that are coming up, the convergence of content, what is on internet, can be on TV, can be on radio, can be everywhere, can be on games, can be on apps at the same time. So there's that huge issue about convergence. And local in South Africa, there is our focus tell us that the industry focus that the internet is growing. So the faster the broadband, the faster the more people are having access, and they can download movies, they can download all kinds of things from the internet. Television is also recorded as growing, because there is content that comes through television. And part of the growth of television or broadcasting also is encroaching into the space of adult content. Out-of-home advertising, which is also about content, your digital billboards and all these things that are growing in the international and local space. There's radio, there's video games, which are growing and expected to grow over a period of time globally and also in South Africa. We've already developed a system in regarding to videos, to classification of games, where the distributors themselves can do the self-classification, or what we call co-regulation. The first step of the process is that the distributors can put the information in the system. Then the end process is that we as the FPB simply look at what has been put into the system and test it against our guidelines, and we issue a decision. So that process is aimed to be much more faster in terms of our time we take in processing such material. And of course, the consumer magazines and newspapers are still here to stay with us, and there is content. We've also seen a lot of encroaching in the adult content space by newspapers and by some magazines. We monitor the content of the newspapers, but we are not a regulator for those that are within the press ombudsman category. But we have a responsibility to monitor and raise an alarm with the press ombudsman once we pick up some content that we believe is content that requires attention. And just on the strategic objectives, on the implications for FPB, in terms of the analysis we've done of the industry, We certainly can't work alone. We have to have global and local industry collaborations. At a global level, currently, one of the systems that has been developed is what is called an international health rating system. So when you buy a computer or hopefully in future an iPad, Apple has not yet joined the group of the distributors who are part of this coalition, but I think in the next few years they will be under pressure to join. So when you buy a cell phone or a computer, be it BlackBerry or whatever, it should come already with those apps that have been rated according to the system that we use as a country. Because once it's here and it's not rated, there isn't much you can do, because you buy the gadget, it goes directly to you, and you can't say borrow us so that you can classify it. So there is that international platform that is put in place. In terms of regulation, the other key issue, is that we have to increasingly find ways to regulate mobile and online content. I think when we were here in Parliament, we did raise that one of the difficulties with regulating the internet, the content that we need to regulate in the internet, is that our legislation currently criminalizes the distribution of adult content on the internet. So it's not giving us authority to do anything, because it is actually criminalizing. It's saying if it happens, then the law enforcement must take over. But with the new regulations that we have submitted to the minister, together with the proposal on the review areas of the legislation, it's also one of the matters we said the legal people must look at, because there is no way you can not allow for distribution in the internet of adult content, but it's about how you regulate that distribution. So you can't completely criminalize it. Then the other issue which is of implication to us is really in respect to capacity, the industry-specific skills that we require and the legal skills. The industry that we are in is highly litigious, and we end up paying so much money on legal fields and opinions, because sometimes we have a legal unit internally, but if you are going to be involved in these big cases, you need to seek outside legal opinion, and you need to work with other outside people that are just to benchmark as well. We industry and consumer awareness, improved governance and efficiencies within the organization, partnerships, automation of some of our processes internally, so that the distributor, as the user of our processes, can have better turnaround times from us as an organization, amongst others. Improving our profile continuously and repositioning FPB, diversifying our funding sources, because we can't get much, really. It's not like tomorrow we'll get 200 million from the government coffers, because we are told there's no money. Continue with our cyber safety education, just to continuously engage people about the issues in the cyberspace, because safety, educating them about their safety, is the most important thing. Even when you regulate the internet space, you still have to engage with young people and adults and educate them about their safety. Interestingly, we focused a lot on children in schools, but we also get those cases of an adult, maybe a woman saying, I have a problem, my boyfriend is circulating a picture of, or my ex-boyfriend, it's usually an ex, is circulating a naked picture of myself all over, and I don't know what to do.
I think it's always a
naked. It's not always an ex-boyfriend, but it's always an ex. So we get those odd cases of adults, and we can't help them. We simply tell them, look, tell the police, we deal with children below 18 in terms of this kind of content, but next time don't allow anyone to take your naked picture, just as a precaution. And then Then in terms of performance management, of course, we have to continuously maintain the accuracy of our statistics and reports. The most important in terms of accuracy being our statistics for compliance monitoring. Information security and management is one issue as we automate that's coming up and developing of a monitoring and evaluation system for the organization. In the past, we've been asked every time when you do outreach, what is the monitoring and mechanism that you are putting in place just to test the effectiveness. We started with this when in February, it was the Internet Safety Month. So we went to about, 30 schools, but we spoke to about 30,000 young people, February and early March, in schools. And we also attached the research capacity of the organization to do surveys with the young people, what do they know about sexual content, child pornography. And I do hope that when you bring the annual report for presentation, we'll share some of the responses that are coming out from young people. But just to say that they are quite advanced young people today. In terms of the strategic outcomes, we had in the previous strategic plan 3 outcomes, but now they've been added to 5. So I will focus more on the other 5 because mainly the others are a continuation of the things that were communicated and started previously. But just in terms of the initiatives, the first strategic outcome is about effective and visible monitoring of films, games, and certain publications throughout the entire value chain, which means we target the content creators, the producers, and the distributors so that we can protect children and inform adults. Some of the strategic initiatives here, we have to continue with our work of classifying. We want to have an electronic labeling system that is put in place so that we make life easy again for our distributors, because when they print the labels, they must print them on their posters directly, not come to FPB for labels, then include them in their posters. To review Gazette and implement classification guidelines, the process for we're implementing the guidelines that were reviewed last year. So towards the end of this financial year, we're starting a new process to review the guidelines for new guidelines in the next financial year, because the legislation says once every 2 years we need to update the guidelines. We must continuously evaluate the convergence of society norms through, we have a research program that looks at what are the key issues. One of the research we are doing now is looking at the impact of new media content on children. There's research around that. There's another one that looks at the distribution channels and what is the impact of content that we find on the streets that should not be on the streets but in the shops. Also to review, I think the board just spoke about the issue of the legislative project, to review our legislation. We've made our submissions to the Minister of Home Affairs on this issue, and the process now is unfolding according to the Department of Home Affairs. The usual things that we do around identifying distributors and ensure that they register, conduct compliance inspections, and industry audits. I just want to pull out industry audits because it's a new issue that we're adding, and it's quite important because if we're saying we're implementing a co-regulation strategy where the distributor takes certain responsibility, the film and publication board takes certain responsibility, we need to go back and confirm that it is actually it has actually been done. I think that, Honourable Member Gam, the last time we were here, there was an issue about iPads and the content, the access to films and games. We were given an instruction to go back and work out this issue and come back and report to the committee. So we have engaged with Apple people, iTunes people. They've registered as a distributor in respect to the film. So in December they launched their iTunes films for South Africa. They use films that have already been classified by the Film and Classification Board. And so we are sure that those films are classified and we monitor them continuously. The aspect of gaming is what we are resolving because the legislation is slightly different on how we deal with the games. We are meeting with them, I know, in April again just to tighten the final aspects of the whole issue. The thing is they have their own gaming system they've put in place for a classification system. We have to test that it takes care of the issues that we are concerned about in South Africa. And I think we are 90% into finding each other on that aspect. We also implement initiatives to ensure cyber safety. This campaign has mainly been physical. We've been going to the school, but the pressure of resources is that we cannot go to as many schools as we want. So one of the approaches we are putting in place is to actually train career management practitioners and LO teachers who are having a responsibility of engaging with the schools on some of these softer issues that we are dealing with as a short-term intervention. In the longer term, hopefully the Department of Education, when it reviews the curriculum, they will consider integrating this module within their life skills orientation program. We have written to the Department of Education about that. I think the third aspect of it is fully automating the cyber safety, so that even learners who are unable to access, they can still be able to download the information and have access to that information. As the CFO will indicate when he's presenting, that the Department, National Treasury, has given us some resources actually focusing on this campaign as an earmarked funding for this financial year. Chair, I will not spend much time on the second and the third SO, because the third one is particularly quite inward-looking. It's about our capacity and resources that we want to put in place. The second one basically is about our ongoing communications and PR initiatives that we put in place as an organization. The fourth one, which is a new one, focuses mainly on online content, being innovative around the content issues that we are dealing with online. I've already spoken about some of the things that we are going to do there, but the most important thing is that we need to have a comprehensive strategy on how we are going to deal with online content monitoring and electronic content labeling and online child protection. The last one is around expanding FPB partnerships and the footprint globally and locally. So here we have a key number of stakeholders that we want to work with nationally and globally, and I have referred to some of these stakeholders in my presentation. I've tried here to be very fast. There are some of the priorities, there are some of the projects that are quite key in terms of the strategy that we are presenting today. We're looking at, in terms of the priorities that are content, that are mandate related, we're looking at online content regulation, we're looking at community outreach and awareness, we're looking at partnerships and stakeholder management, we're looking at enforcement and collaboration, research and development, working with Africa and certain countries. We've had a few countries that have approached us who are only waking up to the reality of new media, and they want to learn how we are doing it, and etc. So we, as part of our strategy, we are saying we'll be working very closely with them. The legislative review project, which we have made inputs for the department. From a capacity enhancement point of view, resourcing is our major issue, but we are hoping that the core regulation aspect we are introducing on new media will bring some form of resources to us. Revenue, but we don't want to give figures yet, because we don't know even how much are we going to be required to use to affiliate to the International S Rating Council. So it might be that we raise funds that we are going to have to pay elsewhere. So, but we do hope that we'll raise some funding there. Revenue generation is linked to the first issue. Human capital, we have to continuously update our skills base as an organization. Monitoring and evaluation is an issue we have not given attention to in the past, but now it's quite central in our strategy. Corporate governance, it's a continuously, we must keep an eye on this. It's working perfectly, but we must continuously keep an eye. Project management is one of those skills that are skills that we continuously upgrade as people on in the organization. Thank you, Chair. I will ask the acting CFO to take some time to present the budget for both the MTF and the current and the incoming financial year.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members of the committee, for giving us the opportunity to present our budget plan for the next coming 4 years and to indicate how we intend allocating our budget in terms of our strategic objectives and as indicated on our APP and our strategy for the next coming 5 years. Chair, the next slide indicates the MTF allocation. Our grant from Department of Home Affairs is actually 13-14 is actually 74 million. That amount, 82.6 million, includes an additional 8.5 additional allocation from Treasury. And in 2014-15 budget, the allocation for FPB, as we stand, is 73.3 million. And 2015-16 is 89 million. And we conclude with 2016-17 with 100 million. In terms of our internal revenue to be generated, we have revenue from classification fees, we have revenue from registration of movies and games and other material as indicated on our act. We have revenue also from annual renewal of classification certificates. And in addition to that, what we normally do, starting from past financial year, we invest our additional grant for two months actually into our investment account. That's where we intend to generate 300,000 from that budget. And then we intend to generate 342,000 from for 2014-15, and then we intend to generate 380 from our investments for about 2015-16, and 2016-17 we say we estimated 420,000 to be to be collected actually from our investment account. Going back to our key revenue items, we have classification fees for 2013-14 budgeted at 8.5 million. For 2014-15 we have 9 million budgeted, and then 2015-16 we have 9.4 million budgeted. 2016-17 we estimate 9.9 million to be generated from classification fees. In terms of registration of submitted materials for financial year, starting from next financial year we budget 1.4 million, and 2014-15 financial year we estimate 1.8 million to be generated. 2015-16 we increased our budget with 200,000 to take it up to 2 million budget, and 2016-17 we budget 2.3 million. In terms of annual renewals of registration certificates, the budget is too low because we don't normally get much annual renewals, so we estimate an amount of 750,000 for 2013-14. We estimate 762,000 for 2014-15, and the next financial year, which is 2015-16, we estimate 854, and the last financial year, as per our presentation, we estimate 976 from annual renewals. The next, that will be all for our MTF budget allocation chair. And the next slide indicates our projected revenue generation for next financial year, 2013-14, the grant subsidies we will receive from the Department of Home Affairs is 74 million, as indicated before, and additional funding from Treasury for online content monitoring is 8.5 million, as CEO has indicated, and then classification fees for next financial year we budget 8.5 million, registration fees we budget 1.4 million, annual renewal of registration certificates we have 750 estimate. And interest to be generated from our investment is 302,000. The total revenue to be generated is 93.6 million, which will be allocated as follows in our next presentation slide. The projected expenditure per strategic outcome, what we did, we tried to allocate our budget as per strategic objective. We have five strategic objectives as indicated, as CEO indicated. And in addition to that, we try to separate operating expenditure and capex from our budget so that we can clearly monitor our budget on monthly and quarterly basis. For strategic objective one, which deals with industry regulation and monitoring, we have 28.4 million budgeted. For strategic objective two, which deals with public awareness and consumer education, we have 10.1 million budgeted. For strategic objective three, which deals with support services, ranges from IT, finance, HR, and other support structures, we have a total of 27.6 million budgeted. Strategic objective four, for this is where we will be allocating the 8.5 million additional grant received from department from National Treasury. So that one will be mainly to position ourselves in the right position for us to be able to regulate and distribute content online. And then the next strategic objective deals with our partnerships. Can be internal, external, international partnerships. We have a budget of 5.6 million. And the next one, in terms of operating expenditure, we have 9.5 million budgeted. CAPEX expenditure, we have 3.6 million budgeted. The total budget is 93.6 million, which is the total revenue budgeted to be allocated. And in terms of finances, that will be all from my side, Chair.
Thank you.
I'll hand over to CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to bring to members' attention that if you look at the allocation for 13-14, the strategic objectives, the personnel costs are built in the strategic objectives, but the total overall organizational personnel costs are around 35% of the total budget of the organization. It's spread through the different strategic objectives.
Thank you very much for your presentation. So it's now time to ask questions. I want to ask a question, but let me see the other hands. One round, except if there's something to clear up afterwards. Honorable Peterson, Maduna, and then Honorable Freitas. Are those the only questions? And Honorable Marcela. Okay, that, in that order, I'll just introduce the question session by asking a few quick questions. First one is, with regard to the Apple matter, I think we need to commend you for the progress made in this regard and that you took our directions seriously in that regard. But I'd just like to ask you, so as I understand you, that this platform that they have launched with regard to films are now only applicable to films that were indeed certified by yourselves in South Africa. Obviously international films and so on as well, but those certified by yourselves. Now, I just want to know what impact this would have on access to films in general, because I suppose that because of your capacity, it is not really possible for you to certify the broad range of films available in the world. So I'd just like to know what impact that would have on that, and what do you plan to do to make sure that access is not denied or limited too much due to the fact that these films have to be certified by you. Secondly, as far as the other area, the games are concerned, just like to know when this matter will be dealt with and when the 90% agreement will turn into 100%, and to what extent this then will this boil down to a situation where South African users will have accessibility to the United States Apple Store, or will it still be limited access in that regard? Secondly, the Top TV matter. You indicated you made a presentation and that it focused on child protection. Do we take it from that you were not opposed to the application by Top TV, but only focused on that specific area? Thirdly, I'd like to know, you make all kinds of predictions. You also indicate that, for example, on page, you didn't number your pages. Maybe you should also ask government printing to assist you in the printing of the numbering of the pages. You indicate that the internet was the fastest growing in 2011 with 27.3% increase, and you make all kinds of other give all kinds of other indications as to what growth has been, and then you make predictions as well. How do you know this? How do you determine this? Where does this information come from? Because in certain respects it seems to be that it's a bit on the low side. And then my final questions deal with the matter of, I'm a bit surprised that you only now have specific strategic objectives pertaining to the effective and visible monitoring of films, games, and certain publications. You say implement the content regulation framework that ensures 100% classification takes place, but it's only at this very late point that you have actually these kinds of strategic outcomes and objectives. Also, with regard to the next one, effective and visible monitoring of films, games, and publications, and so on. That's one aspect to it, just a comment. But the question actually is, you say implement a content regulation framework that ensures 100% classification in the one instance and 75% in the other instance. What I want to know is, you know, I mean, given the broad scope of what has to be monitored, classified, etc., given the massive scope, by when are you going to achieve this 100% and 75%, and at what point are you at the moment in terms of percentages? These are my questions. The next member is Honorable, I always thought it's Maduna Peterson. Is it Peterson Maduna? It's the other way around. The chair usually has it wrong. Yeah, Maduna Peterson. She says she's covered, and we hand over to the Honorable De Freitas.
Chair, you've hijacked a lot of our questions. What I have left just before the presentation, just some of the questions that occurred to me. And that is, you talk about pre-classification of magazines. I'm sure it's a very elementary, basic question, just so that I understand what that means. I'm presuming it means the magazine will self-classify and you kind of ratify it, but just make sure that's the case. Then you sort of slipped in that the present CFO is not present and acting CFO is here, and I'm kind of reading between the lines that there may be might have been a problem. If you could tell us why there's an acting CFO and so forth. And then it was also said that the Film Publications Board is now recognized internationally. What does that mean? Is there an international body that somehow recognizes all classification boards throughout the world? I mean, how do you determine that we're recognized internationally? I presume there's certain criteria we met. These have been asked by Honorable Gaum. Then you also said you mentioned that you're signing more MOUs. Perhaps you can tell us the kind of MOUs you're signing and what the nature of those are. Top TV has been touched, but what I wanted to ask is I'm trying to understand where the Film Publications Board actually fits in with the top. I mean, I understand it's a very controversial issue. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand how the Film Publications Board actually fits in, because it's not a censorship board. So if we could perhaps unpack that, just so that I understand that a little bit better. And then I have one other question, and that is, just find the page, please. Some pages are numbered and others aren't. On your page 18, where you talk about to implement a content classification and labeling initiative, and it was mentioned that you would like to, for example, on posters for your logo to really be on and the classification to be on already. Is there, if that's what I understand, is there legislation that compels whatever distributor to do so? And if not, how do you then enforce that this is done by the distributor? And my third leg of the question is, if there is no legislation, I'm sorry, I don't know the legislation well enough, so I should know this, I apologize. If there is no legislation in this regard, are there plans to introduce such legislation that will enforce these distributors to do so? Thank you.
Last line of questioning coming from Honorable Nkosela.
Hello. Ngos, thank you, Chair. Chairperson of the FPB, the board, and the CEO, and all the delegation, thank you for the presentation. I always have this question. I think it's provoked by the nature and the business of FPP, that in an environment where there is no agreed set of values, where, for instance, if you look on page 18, luckily there is a page there, Honorable Khan, there it is said that on one of your strategic initiatives that you continuously evaluate the convergence of societal norms and values to FPP as you continue to classify. Now my question is, how will you be informed of if there's any progressiveness or convergence of such as you say, societal norms, in an event, in a situation where we have none of the agreed set of values. I remember this has created some controversies in the past. Obviously, the one is well-known, Spear Saga, that we were involved in, and other issues that you may pick in the future, which may be of relevance to your operation. Now, the current one is the pay TV, which is the top TV, three new channels, and your involvement, will it not necessarily be the limiting of one's freedom and choice, especially for the adults who want to explore, who want to entertain themselves, rather than limiting their access? I think one should also be looking at protecting those that should be protected. But I think it's a challenge, Chair, which I'm posing this question to you, Chairperson of the Board and the delegation. Obviously, the CEO has spoken about that wanting to have an interaction to take it further and see when it happens, how will it happen. I've observed in the recent past and currently, I mean, I would come at home from meetings. I'm a single parent. Yeah, there's a gap there. You get home, and my boys are 10 years old. And you find that, you know, there is no person that time. The helper is sitting somewhere else, and they are watching TV on Mzansi. And now we've been watching all sorts of things there. And sometimes you'll find that there's no coordination. But I see that you insist on these local films being coordinated and being being ranked according to the age limits. Now, that is the challenge which I would like to pose to you. How do you coordinate and monitor all of this? So, Chair, I think that that's basically some of the questions in line with the presentation. But the other challenge that I've had, you did not talk to us about the sponsorships or the support you give to media companies or films that are there, where after the at the end of each film you'll see some saying thanks to the Film Reputation Board for supporting us. I would like to know, what is that support? What does it entail? It's not on the presentation. And also there was this award where there were awards, but they were saying thanks to the Film and Publications Board. Now I want to understand your involvement. To what extent are you involved, and what is the nature of your involvement in such activities? So, yeah, the last question. What comprises the 22% real increase in support services? That's for the CFO. And also, what are the major components of the support services program in the budget, which almost half the budget of the FTP? Thank you.
Over to you. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, the good thing about being a chair, you answer all the nice, high-flown ones, and then they'll answer the difficult ones. I think we are together, honorable members, in this journey of trying to embed our constitutional values in our society. We adopted a constitution that gives people freedoms, but Section 2032 limits those freedoms. That's where the tension always is. If we take the issue of Top TV, they are exercising their right to make business, to entertain, and adults are exercising their rights to view. We have an obligation to regulate, and we have an obligation to protect and classify films. Now, broadcasters, television, and all the others, they are under the BCCSA. However, we work with them because we have realized that they have to use our guidelines in order for us to feel comfortable. Now, this space of pornography is our space. We are now saying to them, we have to make sure if that happens, that the rights of the child is not infringed upon. And we're not apologetic about that, and we wanted to make it very clear that adults cannot entertain themselves at the expense of the future generation. That's the tension we have. And as the Film and Publication Board, people believe that we've got more powers than just classifying and making sure that it is very, very clear to whoever wants to make the bottom line, that the bottom line shall not be held at the expense of the protection of children. So ours is to monitor the space. We cannot say no to them. We can campaign as individuals. We can work with people who are in the child's rights, children's rights arena, and so on, because they can make submissions that say no, but we cannot make submissions because the Constitution allows people space to express themselves in that way. So we want to make it clear that that's our position, that's been our position. We may come up strongly sometimes, but the bottom line is that at the end of the day, those who have to make decisions, ICASA will have to take into consideration their freedoms, their rights against the protection and the human dignity of people. Just as an aside, usually these feelings anyway, it's the women who find themselves as actors in them, but that's an aside, which has nothing to do with what we're dealing with here. Where is our CFO? Our CFO has a family, okay, so nothing has happened. No, he has asked formally that we excuse him. He has a family engagement, and we really wanted to say no to him, but it's so special to him. We thought, well, we have an able young man that is working with him, so we said he should come and present, especially because we are not presenting the annual report, but we are presenting what the CFO has worked on adequately with his team. So nothing has happened in that regard. I think I've answered the issue of Talk TV. The issue of magazines, I think the truth is that in terms of the legislation as it currently stands, publications currently stands and not amended, but almost amended by the Constitutional Court judgment. All magazines now that fall under the Press Ombudsman will now no longer have no say over them. It's the Press Ombudsman who has a say. So even if they have got things that are unacceptable, we can just kick and scream and tell the Press Ombudsman this is unacceptable, and then the final outcome will come from. But there are those that fall outside, that deal with adult content. Those are the ones who are asking ourselves, how do we manage that space without limiting their rights again? Because indeed we're not a censor board, and we shall never, and we don't want to be a censor board. Even though when people want to throw stones at us, they call us the censor board. We are not. We refuse to be called the censor board. That is the word that was used in the past, and it is unacceptable to us. But we will take it because it's part of the mandate that we have to carry for our country in our responsibility. I think on sponsorships, I think we've dealt with the issue of how do we deal with the values. There is a particular way in which, of course, the values are in the Constitution. One, we accept that the values that are in the Constitution are ideal values that we all strive towards. And as people exercise their freedoms, sometimes the values clash. And so what we do, I think we explained this in the past, we have focus groups in various areas that from time to time our research people will ask them, this is how we have classified a series of movies. Do you think these movies have been classified adequately? We take people from rural, urban, young, old, so that we can hear some. And more often than not, I think the percentage the CEO will give, more often the feedback says they are spot on. So that's how we then are able to say that the classification that we give is in line with the values. Of course, some South Africans are more liberal, others are extremely conservative. So the medium is usually what works for us. So if the feedback says to us we're doing well, then we accept it. I will ask the CEO and the team to answer the rest of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question on the Apple matter was the impact on access to feelings in general, the decision we have agreed with them to utilize content. In fact, it's them who came to us and said, looking at our regulations, they will use content already classified. We have not studied the extent of what films are out there globally, but we know that major films out there globally get screened in South Africa through your cinemas like New Metro, Stekineko, and other independent cinemas that are there in South Africa. So we're quite confident that certainly on major films like those, South Africans who want to download the content from Apple will not lose out. But in terms of documentaries and other local content that's developed elsewhere that never even comes to South Africa, I mean, I know that countries like Canada have lots of documentaries that they develop, all a number of things, but some of that content never even reach our country through the means that are available currently. So in that case, I think we will, when we meet with them, just find out in respect to the access to the U.S. stores. I'm not aware what are the limitations regarding that access, but I know that different countries are ruled by different legislation. They will advise us on that issue. Our future plans, ideally, currently the system we're using for classifying films is going to be slightly different from the system we're using for classifying games. With games, a distributor is going to log on and start the process of classifying and put in the content. But with films, a distributor still submits films, which as the film and publication board, we classify and we give the decision back. Hopefully with evolution of technology, I know that internationally people are working on looking at technology that can allow for online classification of a film. So a producer of a film or the owner of a film can go through a similar process with the games system to do that. Currently, it's impossible because the guidelines for classifying games, I mean, there's variations in terms of the guidelines, and also from a resource allocation issue. It's one of the things that we have put in to do the research in the current financial year and hopefully commission a system in the incoming financial year as a future plan. The Top TV matter, I think the board chair answered that issue. Basically, the standpoint of the FPB is guided by the legislation that governs FPB. And the reason we're involved in that issue is simply because the legislation of FPB requires that children are not exposed to adult content. Surely adults want to be exposed, but also the FPB legislation legislates how adult content should be distributed in the country. I did indicate earlier on that it says it must not be distributed on the internet. Of course the legislation is outdated, but it requires Parliament to change the legislation. We can't just change it as FPB, but we have highlighted the issue with the Minister of Home Affairs. So as matter stands, our submission was purely focusing on the child protection element and the distribution aspect. There's lots of other NGOs, some of our partners at different levels who are raising a number of different issues, but we did not enter into that space. We would like to leave it to the NGO people and other people who have that mandate. Will we not limit people's choices? I think that we again, I want to just say that ours is to just ensure that whatever that happens in a household, the parents in that household or the guardians in that household take a responsibility. If you have a channel that has adult content in your household, you have to put in place measures, Honorable Mr. Nazela, to ensure that the children are not exposed to that content. Because even single parents, either a single parent looks for a co-parent who's going to be at home throughout to take care of the kids, or find mechanisms to lock particular channels that are being a problem. And I know locking is a problem because kids are too smart than parents currently. But it's a societal issue that we're dealing with. The content that we have, sir, is coming from the PricewaterhouseCoopers report. They do a report every year, which is an industry analysis report. So we take the content that is relevant to us, and we make sense of that content and analyze it. But all the numbers are not from me, are not from FPB, but from PricewaterhouseCoopers. And they're quite credible in this, I believe. In this, they've been doing this thing for quite a while. So every year, they give an entertainment and industry forecast for the next 5 years. In terms of the strategic outcomes, the only two new strategic outcomes are strategic outcome 4 and 5. The rest of the strategic outcomes have been there. And so some of the issues that we're raising as strategic initiatives are simply to ensure that we continue on the work that we've been doing in the current financial year and maybe in the past. So it's not a new thing, honorable member, that we are going to be classifying content and doing industry compliance. Just in terms of there was a question about 100% classification of material and where are we. Currently, material that we receive, what we define as submitted with material, and for us to classify the content from a distributor, it must be paid for in advance because we don't work on a credit option. It must be paid for in advance. There's other things that they have to meet the requirements. Once they meet all those requirements, we classify that content. So our target is that whatever that we receive that meets those requirements must be classified. So we've been operating on classifying everything that we receive 100%. We don't have a backlog at the moment at all. And so we're simply maintaining that strategic objective because we don't want to miss out that issue. We don't want to relax. The 75% industry compliance is one of the things that we're still doing more work on it because the definition of our industry, if the people on the street, the pirates are defined as our industry, then there's a problem. We will never meet that level of compliance. So it's an issue that we are still working on. It's an aim that we are aiming to reach that particular percentage. I referred earlier to a research that we are doing on industry compliance. That research is going to help us a lot to even get more information, and we have awarded the research to a credible, big, local, international company to do the research. The pre-classification, what does it mean? I think the board chair answered the question, and I'm going to ask one of my colleagues to further give a bit of response, Palisa, into that question. The acting CFO was answered. The international recognition, I think that we're measuring it at different levels. FPB now gets invitations to come to international platform and share experiences about our classification system, about the cyber safety campaign, about the child online protection, reporting on child pornography, etc. The particular conference that the board chair referred to, which is an EU one, is where we've been invited. We're going to be presenting to about, I think, 200 EU parliamentarians and the other NGOs in the EU space around the work we're doing on child protection and cyber safety. So I think that's one element of it. The second element is us being part of international structures that are operating in our space. The International Apps Council I spoke about earlier were part of InHope. There is a movement to set up something within the Africa region, and I think the conversation is starting in Ghana in June, and we've been invited to be part of that initiative itself. So I think it's different measures that you can use to actually utter that statement, and we feel comfortable that we're in a space where we are recognized for the work that we're doing as South Africa, and we have people wanting to benchmark against us, which gives us a comfort. The MOUs, I can just indicate, honorable member, that we've been trying. I think one of the critical MOUs we want to have is an MOU with ICASA. Because the work that we are doing with ICASA links together, especially when you deal with ISPs and some aspects of the work. Like now, for instance, this aspect of television. Television is the responsibility of ICASA, but this overseeing distribution of adult content is the responsibility of the Film and Publication Board. So we have to certainly work together on those issues. ICASA is one of those. DOC, with Department of Communications, we've also worked on an MOU with them, but it's one of those MOUs that are just taking longer and longer in terms of being finalized. The Department of Basic Education as well, because the issue of educating them while they are in school and capture them while they are young is quite an important issue for us. Electronic content labeling, is this compelled by legislation? Okay, content labeling is compelled by legislation. Stekineko or NU Metro cannot show a movie, cannot put a poster and show a movie in the circuit without advising you on the age category of that movie. So this is basically what we mean by this. The city shops cannot sell games and DVDs without indicating having that thing that shows. So our compliance monitors actively go to those shops, check, do the spot checks to ensure that these shops comply. I'm making an example about the easier ones that were, it's easy to catch when they comply, and there's a huge risk for them not to comply. Then you have the other level, which is your independent, your small independent distributor, maybe in Kanduli, who's selling DVDs in a house or in a corner shop or in the street. Those are the most difficult to comply, but we still require them to comply, because it is important that the content they sell to those communities is acceptable content. Set values, Chair, answered the issue. I just want to say that we do research on this. We know there's no agreed set of values, so we have to work with what we have. So we do different levels of research, the focus groups, the actual research that goes to talk to people in their communities. I think in the convergence surveys that we did last year, in 12-13 financial year, we spoke to about 20,000 South Africans just to give a feedback on the content they are watching, and this has been spread throughout different types of South Africans. We try in the sample to be as big as possible. How do we coordinate and monitor the distribution? On TV, we look at what is on TV, and we follow the channels to complain regarding the content that's there. But remember that our legislation does not give us any powers to engage with TV. So that's why I said earlier on the top TV issue is going to be a very important issue, and a test case probably before FTB ends, and Parliament as a whole as legislators, because you have two institutions that have two different responsibilities that are merging. TV is the responsibility of ICASA, but pornographic content distribution or adult content distribution is the responsibility of the Film and Publication Board. So we don't know how that issue will unfold and at the end. Cinemas, we have monitors, they check the cinemas, game stores and all those kind of distributors, shops, we have monitors, they check, they do their reports, we have a whole system where we set targets and we monitor the how they are performing and all those kind of things. The biggest problem with the system is that even there you can't do much. You monitor, you give them 3 weeks to correct, 3 months to correct. They come, you go back, they have not corrected, you must go and look for subs to come and help you to take out the information out. Subs, child pornography is part of the priority crime. So if there's anything that relates to child pornography, subs jump. But if there's issues that relate to just content, etc., they will prioritize according to what's available. But we have beautiful best practices of having worked with some of the metropolis where they actually work with the FPB and remove the staff, but the process is just long, and sometimes you miss the momentum in respect to those. The issue of sponsorships, I'll ask SSA as well to talk on the issue, but I think really, I can't remember any film that we have sponsored as FPB. What we work with basically, I know that with the awards, we've partnered with the South Africa, with the National Film and Video Foundation, which is a public entity under the Department of Arts and Culture, as part of publicizing our new guidelines and focusing, we partnered around specifically the features director that encompassed all the elements that we are looking for in terms of advertising, in terms of reaching out on our guidelines. But we do that as part of our strategy to reach out, to educate, especially to engage with industry people, because we're not going to find them in workshops. Those are the things that they attend, you engage with them. But also to reach out to the millions of South Africans who are going to be watching TV, because this thing is live, is being done in that way. We have our own internal guiding policy on how we take those decisions. But our approach is mainly a developmental one that says it's partnerships, it's not sponsorships. We cannot sponsor as FPB because we are a government entity. We don't raise any funds to give a sponsorship to anybody. But sometimes we are required to contribute when we are agreeing, when we are entering into those agreements. The what comprises the 22%? I think CFO will answer that question.
Can I just ask you? You need to be brief now, please.
Okay, I'm done, Chair.
Yes. Through you, Chair. In response to the 22% increase for support staff, so let me start with the first indicating the support staff we have, structures we have under SO3. We have CFO, mainly it will be external audit expenditure. It will be office space allocation budget. It will be compliance issues related. And we have other budget items like legal related support services. We have risk management, which is under SSE now. It was our COO. And in addition to those budget line items, we have governance, which forms part of our support structure. That relates to council, and we have a separate budget for council committees. We have board committee, and in addition to that, the budget allocation for employee costs is also part of this.
Sorry, if I can just add to that, the last time I spoke to this committee was at the last set of accounts, where we were talking about the fact that previously we hadn't put together our finance and our operations. We now are fully within that process, and I just related to this question, and I'm on the page projected expenditure. If we look at the 27 million which relates to management, there's also 9.5 million operating expenditure and 3.6 capital expenditure. Those items need to be further allocated, because as you've just heard, they actually relate a lot more to performance than is actually in the figures at the moment. And we already are revising all the time the figures so that we can actually get our administration down to 10%, which is our goal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it was quite a comprehensive contribution that you've made here today, and also interesting questions coming from members. And thank you very much for coming here today and making this presentation to us. I think at this point, if members are agreeing, we will adjourn. Thank you very much. Thank you.